My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. In virtually every religion, there are references to beings who are charged with protecting, healing, and influencing humanity. In the Abrahamic and Zoroastrian religions, these beings are known as angels. By definition, these angels are messengers, and in biblical times brought messages to spiritual leaders and those who would be charged with leading humanity in a more positive direction. Are angels still communicating with us today? Who are they reaching out to and why? What message do they have that we all need to listen to and really hear? My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Dr. Irene Blinston, has experienced contact with angels and received some life-changing messages. Irene Blinston earned her PhD in transpersonal psychology. Her interests and expertise include psychic phenomena, consciousness, altered states of consciousness, the survival of consciousness after death, encounter experiences, mystical experiences, and paranormal supernatural phenomena. Dr. Blinston is also an experiencer, and like so many other experiencers, she's kept those events in her life secret. She knows that by disclosing our experiences to others, we risk being called crazy. But it is this lack of exposure that keeps these aspects of our human potential misunderstood, understudied, and sometimes labeled as pathology. In order to better understand one of her own encounter experiences, Dr. Blinston conducted her doctoral research on the impacts and lifelong after effects of religious apparitions experienced in childhood. She joins me this week to discuss her just released book, Cracking the Angel's Code, One Woman's Journey Deciphering Angelic Messages of What is to Come. Please join me in welcoming to Destination Unlimited, Dr. Irene Blinston. Good evening, Irene.
Good evening. Thank you for having me here.
And thank you so much for joining us this week on Destination Unlimited. Irene, please share with our listeners your early life, including your faith background, and how it shaped your beliefs and interests.
Well, I was raised Catholic and went to Catholic school. My mother was devout Catholic, and my father was an atheist, actually. So it was an interesting combination. But I did go to Catholic school, and so I was raised in that faith.
So. And how did that shape your beliefs and interests?
Well, I really felt connected to that, to the stories, basically, and felt very connected to Jesus, and even thought when I was a little girl that I was Mary Magdalene in a past life. But that eventually started to shift as I became, well, I would call myself pretty much a precocious kid, and I wanted answers to questions about things that happened in the Bible or things that happened that they taught us in school. And when they couldn't provide the answers, and it was kind of like, well, you just have to trust it and keep it in faith. And I just had a real difficult time doing that. So by the time I was 11 years old, I just declared myself an atheist and just really had a firm anger, I think, about the lack of answers. But that did eventually mellow out, and then I just decided that I was agnostic, and I take that literally, without knowing. But I still was a spiritual seeker because I wanted to find those answers, even if the priests and nuns couldn't provide them.
Now, you refer in the book to your mom as a closet occultist. What aspects of the occult did your mother share with you?
Well, I use that term somewhat loosely, but my mother was, well, let me just put it this way. When I was a little girl, I thought everybody's mother carried a pendulum in their purse. And so she was very much interested in forms of divination. She read tea leaves. She read cards, like regular playing cards she read. And she was also very interested in contacting the dead and just even the spirit world. We had a Ouija board. I used to do the Ouija board with my mother when I was like 5 years old. I couldn't read it, but I would be, you know, doing it with her and she would be reading it. So it was an interesting childhood. She also trained my brothers and I have four brothers, and she trained us as children to enhance our psychic skills. And I don't know if you're familiar with Zener cards, but she got them from somewhere, and they're the psychic training cards that have like a star, a circle, a square. And she used to hold them up and look at them, and she'd go, okay, what am I holding? And so we were trained to enhance our psychic abilities as children, which I thanked her for every day in my adult life, because I felt so blessed to have that and not be stifled as children. It was awesome.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that we frequently discuss on this show is that when children show abilities, are sensitive to subtle energy, can get psychic information, that they have to be encouraged to pursue that rather than told that they have a overactive imagination, as I was told when I was a child. And it's so important that parents encourage their children to express whatever they're feeling and not ridicule them for doing that.
Right. And that's the interesting thing is, too, with my mother, was that she was studying all of these things but had no one to talk to about it except her children. And so she started teaching me astrology and numerology when I was about 5 years old. I can remember her, you know, telling me about the signs and the planets. And she was very interested in otherworldly things, reincarnation for one, and also, like I said, contacting the spirit world, and particularly, if possible, to contact her friends that had passed away. And it was something that was very open in our home. My father just kind of was like, whatever entertains you, you know. It was something that always was always going on. But it wasn't really spoken about outside the home.
I'm certain that your teachers in Catholic school would have been very upset if they had known about your mother's activities.
Probably. And I think that's why she just kept it on the down low, you know. Yeah. Very funny when I think about it, but she was so interested, and I just really picked up on that interest that she had, and I developed a love for that as well, and I just feel like I had such a blessed childhood because of that. Oh, man, I just, memories of it is really, it's heartening to me to think back and remember just how fortunate we were. I really am blessed.
Absolutely. Now, you come from a background of both scientific and spiritual interest. How do you balance the two? And are science and spirituality mutually exclusive?
Well, that's an interesting question, because prior to my understanding of quantum physics, for instance, I would say they might be viewed as mutually exclusive, because in hard science, there, you know, the materialism and the materialistic perspective is, if it can't be measured, touched, you know, it doesn't exist. And so that did create a little bit of a problem in my mind. But at the same time, because I had had experiences as a child, I knew there was something. I knew there was something more. And science just couldn't explain it. So, you know, I could be kind of hardcore as a kid, but at the same time, you could not sway my belief that there is something more that we just cannot see. And I followed that and held that. Obviously, I studied it for my PhD, so it was in my life all the time. And now I think that, especially when I've started reading about multiple dimensions, when they discovered the equation for the 10th dimension, that's when I thought, wait a minute, this is pointing out to mystical experiences. This is where it ties together. We don't have the exact answers yet, but boy, did that point an arrow in the direction of possibility.
Absolutely. A lot of you had mentioned quantum physics, and a lot of the experimentation in quantum mechanics and quantum physics point to the fact that two separate pieces of matter can be affected, even though they're a great distance apart, if they come from the same atom, and can one stimulate one, the other reacts accordingly. And right. That indicates an invisible force that's taking place.
Yes, it's fascinating, isn't it? I love it.
Absolutely. When did you first attempt automatic writing, and what was that first experience like? We're going to have to get a brief explanation. We'll pick up more on that after the break, but go ahead, tell us about that.
Okay, well, I don't know my exact age. It was obvious when I learned to write. We called it spirit writing, my mother did, and it basically is holding a pen to paper and letting the pen move on its own, because we let spirits or the spirits of the dead write through us. And my experience was pretty sad because I couldn't do it. As much as I tried, I could not do it. My brothers could all do it. My mother was really good at it, but I couldn't do it. So my experience was unsuccessful as a child.
Your initial experiences were unsuccessful.
Yes, my initial experiences, yes. And I tried it several times, and it still wouldn't work. So.
Now, we're going to pick up on that after the break. My guest this evening is Dr. Irene Blinston. She's the author of Cracking the Angel's Code, One Woman's Journey Deciphering Angelic Messages of What is to Come. And we'll be back with more of Irene after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Have you bought into the idea that you have to work hard for your money, that business is hard? I will share some dynamic access consciousness tools to get you out of your own way so you can create a business that actually succeeds. Join me, Simone Millicers, on The Joy of Business at 4 p.m. Mondays Eastern.
Hope you enjoyed your meal. And I just want to say, he's lucky to have a brother like you.
Lucky? Caring for my brother is far from easy. But he's a part of me. Like my arms and legs, so I'll be his. No time for tired. Nothing can disable this love. He needs me, but I'm the lucky one, even though I need help now and then.
If you're caring for a loved one, visit aarp.org/caregiving for care guides and community. Support for your strength. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Today we decided to walk to school. The light counted. 15, 14,
41, 31, I mean 13.
We took a left on Carroll Street. Danny's smart, but he gets distracted. I realized he forgot his homework. I hope he doesn't have another bad day at school.
When you can see learning and attention issues from their side, you can be on their side. That's why there's Understood.org, a free resource for the parents of the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues. Go from misunderstanding to Understood.org. Brought to you by Understood and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Sylvia Henderson, intuitive life coach and energy healer. Are you ready to elevate and rise way above your normal? Be sure to listen to my show, Intuitive Transformations, on Om Times Radio, Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. Get the inspiration you need to transform your life.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening is Dr. Irene Blinston. She's the author of Cracking the Angel's Code, One Woman's Journey Deciphering Angelic Messages of What is to Come. So before the break, you were talking about your early experiences with automatic writing, or what you used to call spirit writing when you were a child. Mm-hmm. And you said initially you had problems. When did those problems go away?
Well, occasionally I would try it. And when I say occasionally, like every couple of years or, you know, even 5 years going by. But I just thought I would give it a try again as an adult. It was not too long after my father passed away. I have this in the book, and I have to admit, I was looking for lotto numbers, and my father was a gambler, so I thought, you know, who better to ask than a dead gambler with the inside scoop, you know, and I tried, and of course I'm like, okay, Dad, come on, and nothing. That pen just sat there, was nothing happening, and I was so frustrated. And then I just thought, what the heck? If somebody wants to say something, just go for it. And all of a sudden, the pen started to move. And I was flabbergasted. I had to not tense up and just let it continue to write. And that's when it started.
And so that was your first contact, really, with the angels.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Yeah.
Were you aware of that at the time, or did you think it was just disembodied spirit?
I didn't know what it was, to be honest with you. I knew it wasn't my father because it was, I just intuited that. I mean, it was something. And when it started writing, I wish I had my original writings to look at to remember exactly what they wrote. But it was just writing, and basically some of it was actually foreign, like a foreign language. And then they would repeat the sentences or statements. And so it may have been something like, we are here, we are here, we are here for you, kind of thing. And that's when I started asking questions. Who are you? What do you want to tell me? And that's when they started to give me, actually it was just one. And I asked her name. She told me she was Yi and that she was female. And that's when she started saying weird things that I didn't understand. So I used to say, can you say that in another way? I don't understand what you're communicating to me. And that's when she would start using a certain word, and I was trying to decipher. It was like, Pharaoh. But I found out when she's writing, it was upside down, E-F-E-R-O. And she used it so much, I just thought, okay, this is important. I need to figure this out. And so I kept asking her, why are you repeating this word? And so that's how it started. And then it was just, you know, I was supposed to figure this out. And it became like an adventure in a way. It was like, okay, I've got to find what this means. And so I have to say, I got addicted to it. I mean, I was just basically, I couldn't stop because I wanted to know the answers. So yeah, I was doing a lot of writing when it first started.
Now, you started looking up some of these words in different languages, but to no avail, correct?
Well, close. I never found anything with the word they used was a pharaoh. I never found that. I found something close, which I think it was from Latin, oferi, or something like that. And that meant offering. And I thought, well, that's interesting. And then for one of the angel names, I found some things for something close to that, and it meant the phoenix rising from the ashes. So and I have to admit, I absolutely loved doing that research and trying to find those answers. I mean, I felt like Indiana Jones. It was really, it was very interesting, and it's like going into the rabbit hole. It was hard to get out because I was having so much fun doing it. It was very interesting and also enlightening. And I have to admit, it did scare me a little bit, some of the things they were telling me. It put a lot of pressure on me, or I felt a little bit of pressure. And mainly it started with disbelief. You know, I don't believe what they're telling me. But that didn't stop me. I just kept asking questions and continuing to write.
So here you were getting basically spiritual information from what you perceived to be the angelic realm. And the scientist in you was researching. What what was that time of your life like?
What was difficult was people that don't understand the whole metaphysical perspective, you know, just like, what are you doing, Irene? And so it became difficult in the sense of relationship. I was very lucky, the boyfriend that I had at that time, he didn't understand it, but he was just like, well, if you feel compelled to do that, then do that, you know, keep studying it and keep at it if you must, you know, it's okay, I support you, which was really nice. Because it almost became kind of an obsessive thing, because I wanted to find the answers, and I wasn't successful in a lot of it, but in some things I was, and boy, did I learn things that I had no idea about. It was pretty amazing, really. Even when I was writing the book or editing the book, when I was working on it, I was just like, it's amazing the things that I've learned and was informed about, with something that most people would go, oh, that's just you writing it, your unconscious mind, you're making that up as you write it. But that is not the case, because I wrote things that I had no knowledge of whatsoever.
That touches on a really important point. How did you determine that you were actually communicating with something other than your own thoughts and consciousness?
I wasn't sure. I actually thought, you know, this is my ego, because I'm like, whoa. And what I did is I tried to find someone who didn't know me, but who was really educated in the metaphysical world, and to show her or talk to her about what was happening to me, to find out, is this just my ego writing this? You know, is this just my ego sharing it? And she said, no, it wasn't. And I didn't have anything else to go on, so I had to trust her, and I did trust her, because there wasn't an explanation of how I could write these things when I had no knowledge of them, no prior knowledge. So it was pretty interesting, and at the same time, I don't even have a word for it. I was astonished. I was excited. I was mind blown. So yeah, it was an interesting time back then.
Now, you touched upon another point, and that is that many people who have a spiritual awakening, be it on the psychic realm, be it on any other realm, sometimes find that it makes their existing relationships difficult to maintain. Did you find the same thing on a go-forward basis?
I did, to a certain degree. At the earlier stages, it was more like, this is fun, you know, and I don't mean for me, although I did have fun doing the communication, but, people that I knew were having fun because they would ask questions and the angel would answer them. And so it became kind of a fun thing for them until it became a little apocalyptic. And then that changed things, because then it became a little bit scary, and then it got deeper, and then it became even more scary. And it was, some of the communication was upsetting to some people, and it did strain some relationships, and it actually broke one up as well.
Those were messages that those folks were not ready to hear.
Right, exactly. They weren't ready to hear it. And and they didn't want to hear it. So that's, you know, it's kind of like sharing information that scares somebody. And even though they may intuit that there is a possibility, I can only relate it to kind of like when, I mean, I do it too. You know, you bury your head in the sand, you're in denial or whatever. And I'm guilty of that in a lot of ways too. But when you keep talking about it, I have to say for myself, when I would keep talking about it, it really put a strain on the relationship. And this was really apparent with a really good friend of mine. She was very much afraid of what I was talking about. And the people who are afraid of death were very afraid of it. So yeah, it did become problematic, and it did put strains on relationships for sure.
Did anyone use their personal faith dogma against you?
You know, that's interesting that you asked that, because I wouldn't say they used it against me, but they were trying to warn me that, you know, that Well, one is that I was communicating with the devil, and they pray for me. So, and these are, because I was a practicing psychic at that time, and that was what I did for work, and I had clients and people that, and I also advertised, so people knew who, I was recognized in public, let's put it that way. And people would say, you know, you've got to protect yourself, and you know that this is, you could pull in entities from the lower dimensions and negative energies and things like that. So so you know, I was getting it from Christian folks to pray for me, and I was getting it from metaphysical folks that I needed to protect myself with white light and things like that.
Absolutely. My guest this evening, Irene Blinston, she's the author of Cracking the Angel's Code, One Woman's Journey Deciphering Angelic Messages of What Is to Come. Irene, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you.
Well, my book is available on Amazon in both paperback and in Kindle version, and it will not be available to be ordered at bookstores for another 6 weeks or so. So right now, Amazon is the only place you're able to get it.
And how can they find out more about you?
Well, well, probably in the book. I really don't have a website for it. I wasn't expecting this to, you know, to become that a big deal, actually. So unfortunately, I don't have that information up. There is one, if they go to blinston.com, they can read a little bit about some of the work that I've done in the paranormal and supernatural realm. And on that website, I have some things. It's an older website, so bear, you know, forgive me, but that does give information, and it gives information about my research.
And we'll be back with more of Irene Blinston and Cracking the Angel's Code after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
1 in 3 adults in America have pre-diabetes, but most don't know it. To let people know it can be reversed before it becomes type 2 diabetes, professional basketball player Julius Randle is doing everything in reverse.
I'm only dunking with reverse windmills. I drove the whole way to practice in reverse. I don't recommend it. This move's called the reverse shuffle. I do recommend it. And it took me months to learn how to speak in reverse, like this. Here's 10 almost for diabetes type 2 with living Ben has mom my. In other words, my mom has been living with type 2 diabetes for almost 10 years. So together, we want to say to the 84 million Americans at risk, exercise and healthy eating can help reverse prediabetes. Start by taking a simple 1 minute risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Bet he can't say that in reverse. You don't know my
name. Knowing your breasts can save your life. Go to knowyourgirls.org for the facts you need on breast health. Brought to you by Susan G. Komen and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening is Dr. Irene Blinston. She's the author of Cracking the Angel's Code, One Woman's Journey Deciphering Angelic Messages of What Is to Come. Irene, you had talked about your work as a psychic, as a practicing psychic, and also in the paranormal. Share with us a little bit about that.
Well, I work, well, being raised by my mother the way I was, I became a professional astrologer and also a direct psychic. So I did psychic work and was a psychic practitioner, more like a intuitive, you know, counselor. And so I was doing that. And then when I started to go for my education, I knew that I wanted to study and do research. So I had planned to go as far as a PhD. That's what my dream was. And so when I went into my doctoral program, going into transpersonal psychology, those are the things that we study. So I did research in two different areas. One was actually studying the survival of consciousness after death. And the other, which I did my doctoral research on for my dissertation, was studying children who are adults who, as children, experience religious apparitions, which was truly based on my own experience. I was trying to connect with people who had had that same type of experience or something really similar to it. So in school, we also studied psychic phenomena, and the people who started the school and some of the faculty there were part of the SRI. I think it was SRI where they did psychical research.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I was rubbing elbows and being taught by these people who were like the trailblazers in, well, not just paranormal, but parapsychology. So I was studying psi, studying altered states of consciousness, and again, survival of consciousness after death. These were really interesting areas of research. And really, we were trailblazing at school in some of the research we were doing. And it goes deeper than that even, but truly in transpersonal psychology, we're looking at that it's not just behavior in the sense that psychology or conventional psychology looks at, although we studied that, we also looked beyond that. It's like our connection to spirit or something more out there. So we didn't label that as pathology. We labeled it as human experiences, or we're spiritual beings, you know, having human experiences.
Right.
But that's how we looked at it. So we wanted to go deeper. And my belief is that we have so much potential as humans. And here's where hard science comes in and puts the brakes on it, because they won't accept the research, and which is a shame. And I don't know when it will be able to meld together. I hope someday. But the research is pretty phenomenal and very interesting, just to show our potential. We have so much potential as humans, and I would love to see people develop it. So that's my passion.
No, thank you for saying that, and I agree with you 100%. I think everyone should, if we could quiet our minds and start listening more than talking, I think a lot of people would start developing their faculties, and I think it's really important, especially in our world as it is today. When you were at SRI, did you do any work with Russell Targ or the remote viewing people?
I wasn't there. It was way before my time, but the original researchers there, I actually had dinner at Russell Targ's house just when I was a student. Mm. He has salons every now and then, and it was like, oh, I was rubbing elbows with some, I was so blessed. I was rubbing elbows with some big names. And but no, I didn't do study with him, but some of the faculty members knew him very well or had worked with him. So yeah, I was exposed to some really exceptional people.
Now, getting back to the work with angels, you had mentioned one of the angels gave you the name Yi and was feminine. What was the other angel's name that came up?
There, the second angel that came up was, and I pronounce his name Ankar. I truly don't know how it's pronounced, but that's how it came to me in my mind when he gave me his name. And so Ankar, yeah. And he kind of actually put Yi in the background in a way, because he was sharing so much information when he finally came through. And even though they both shared information, Ankar was pretty predominant in the communications. Yeah.
Did those names resonate with you in any way?
Not at all. Not at all. And it was Ankar, because in Arabic, I think it's Arabic. In Arabic, Anka is the phoenix, like mm-hmm. phoenix rising from the ashes.
Right.
And then, of course, Ankara, which I didn't know at the time. I had no education back then, no higher education. And Ankara is the capital of Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw that, I was like, oh my gosh. And so I started to study Turkish to see if I could find a connection to a better understanding of Ankar's name. And of course, he had he had some connection to the people in Lost Civilization. So it's very interesting.
Absolutely. Now, you had mentioned that some of your friends thought that you might be doing something where you were connecting with lower energy level beings and started praying for you. Did you ever, at any time, did you ever feel uncomfortable in your communication with Yi and Ankar?
I did not. In fact, I felt like I just felt like I had this protective energy around me, and that they were my friends, for lack of a better word. And no, I didn't feel that way at all, although I was warned about that and actually told that I should get rid of all of it, banish them from the environment, and just stop, because I was the potential was that I would be possessed, you know, that they would take possession of me. And so I did, actually, and I hated that. I hated doing that, but I did because they scared me. Not the angels, but friends who were telling me, it's like the Ouija board or whatever, you can get low energy entities and they will attach. And so I did for a while. I had, you know, I knew they were still there, but, you know, that what was great is they kept their distance so that I wouldn't get freaked out. I just needed to be able to get through that process and trust myself again. And it was through another person that I had met who convinced me that she was a direct psychic, actually. And she convinced me that if I felt that they were positive beings, then I should go with how I'm feeling. And then someone else told me that I should ask them if they're of the light. And they're and entities are supposed to answer if they're of the light or not. Now, I don't know if that's true, but I did. I went ahead and started writing again and asked them that, and they told me that they were. So I then, after that brief hiatus from writing, I had started writing again.
In your paranormal work, did you ever encounter anyone who was dealing with lower energy beings?
I hadn't personally, but I know that my colleagues in school and that were actually studying to be psychotherapists, that, yeah, I and possession, too. And I learned a lot about shamanism. And I think that we don't understand it with the science of the Western world, but the indigenous folks, they know it. You know, they can tell if there's an entity attachment, and or if you know some aspect of ourselves is attached to something else, even, so we can call our spirit back. Mm. So yeah, I didn't have an exact encounter with anyone, meaning like clients or whatever, but I know people who have and actually have done soul retrieval, and even for lack of a better word, because it's the only Catholic word that's coming to me, like an exorcism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, your book, I rarely read a book in a single sitting. I read your book in a single sitting because it was captivating and riveting, and it kept me going from page to page to page.
Oh.
And then when it got to the point where the angels charged you with your mission, and that blew my mind. What is the mission that the angels charged you with?
I thought it blew your mind. That makes two of us.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm supposed to save the world. You imagine?
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Wow. And,
yeah.
And how are you supposed to do that?
I really don't know. You know, there are supposed to be others that come and help on the way. And it's one of the ways that they told me was to get the word out, you know. And they kind of chewed me out one day. And it's like, you can get on television and talk about it. You can write a book and get the book out there and, you know, let people know about what's happening. And it all was related to what's to come for the planet. And when they first started really getting kind of apocalyptic and predicting what's happening, or not, they weren't even predicting, they were just saying, hey, this is what we're coming to here. And because the angels wanted to come back, they had been here before and they wanted to come back. So they wanted to me to get the word out there so people would stop ruining this planet and destroying the planet, because they wanted to come back to it, and it was the garden that they left that they wanted to return to. So I was supposed to save the world.
How did that affect your life?
It was pretty heavy, I have to tell you. And that's when I felt like I had to go out, and I was, you know, Chicken Little, the sky is falling. And that's when a business colleague and friend of mine told me that I was scaring her and I was scaring clients, and that I wouldn't have any more clients if I didn't stop talking about it. And it eventually led to so much pressure on me that I had a breakdown, and I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. And it was pretty hefty. It really was. It's very, very hard to deal with.
Did they help you through that, the angels?
Actually, I made a decision, because I'm supposed to learn to be strong and discern if I'm going to be a leader. So I had to be the leader of my own life with my recovery and everything else from PTSD. I was in officers, what did I call it? Spiritual officers training. Yeah, I graduated. I did it.
Obviously, and that's the reason why you wrote this book. We'll talk more about that in the next segment. My guest this evening is Dr. Irene Blinston. She's the author of Cracking the Angel's Code, One Woman's Journey Deciphering Angelic Messages of What Is to Come. And we'll be back with more of Irene after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Change and growth are part of natural life, and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the Om Times Experts program. With Om Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
You took the first step and quit smoking, but even former smokers may still be at risk for lung cancer. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit SaveByTheScan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening is Dr. Irene Blinston. She's the author of Cracking the Angel's Code, One Woman's Journey Deciphering Angelic Messages of What Is to Come. So before the break, we were talking about your mission and how it affected your life and the intending things and you having to strengthen yourself to prepare yourself for that mission. On our spiritual paths, often others come into our lives to affirm our experiences. Did you find that also?
Well, yes, I did many times. And the main character in that affirming information was actually my oldest brother. And he he would just show up, call me or show up with information that I was trying to find answers to that the angels had told me about, and I didn't know what they were talking about. So, and of course, I asked them, can you tell me what you mean? And they're like, yes, but you've got to find out for yourself. It's like, we're here to wake you to it. It's up to you to find the answer. So I'm doing these searches trying to find these answers. And again, this was before the computer. We had World Wide Web or Google or anything like that. I just had libraries to go to. And that kind of information was really hard to find. My brother had much more available to him down in Southern California. And so he would call me, and some information the angels just gave me, he'd call out of the blue, not even knowing I was communicating with angels. And he'd be talking about a book he found on the very topic I was trying to find the answer to. It was, the synchronicities were crazy. I mean, it was mind blowing. So I knew something big was happening, because it was, they were getting to my brother to help me get the answers. It was pretty wild.
Well, you talked about the word synchronicity, and I think that those of us who have walked a spiritual path, when we open to that path, we find that the synchronicities just keep coming and coming and coming. Do you find that to be the same?
I do, yes. And also, too, when you make a commitment, or, you know, you make a statement to the universe, if you will, that, you know, like, I'm going to find this information, and then the universe opens up for you, and you have so many opportunities that come. That's my view. And I certainly have had that experience, especially when I was trying to find the information on some of these, you know, like foreign things that the angels were telling me about, and trying to basically decipher what they were saying. And here, it's like a friend gives me a book. I don't pay attention to it. I put it on a bookshelf. They're telling me about something. I go to get something off my bookshelf, and this book literally falls off the bookshelf onto the floor, face up, with exactly the words I was looking for. That blew me away. And that kept happening. So it was almost like I got to the point, well, of course that happened. So I think we all have that capability. You know, we can open the floodgates, even if we're open to receiving that much information that quickly.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. Where did those messages, the synchronicities, take you on your journey of discovery?
Well, they talked about past life. The angels did. And I think one of the most interesting things that I discovered was Lemuria. And I'd never heard of Lemuria when they told me about Lemuria. I'm like, what is that? And they said, you can look it up in the dictionary. So I'm just like, because I was a big dictionary person. And so I looked in the dictionary, and the only thing that was there was lemur. And then in the description, it said, believed to have come from an island continent called Lemuria. And I was just like, oh my God, there really was a Lemuria? There is a word, Lemuria was real. And I discovered it was actually a continent. I had no clue what it was. And so that led me on this whole thing. And then I got a call from my brother, and he goes, I found this book at the bookstore. I just wanted to tell you about it. It's about this lost continent called Lemuria.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
And of course, Lemuria is the counterpart to Atlantis.
Yes. And there are, this is where there's a little bit of, a lot of people view Lemuria to have been in the Pacific Ocean. And when they were telling me about Lemuria, and I saw it actually in the Indian Ocean. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, there's a little disagreement there on the location of Lemuria. And I have no argument. All I can say is this is what came to me, and this is the information I received through these angels.
And what was your past life in Lemuria?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I was actually brought here from heaven, which was it's a planet outside the solar system is heaven. And so I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. And I was brought here in the time of Lemuria, and I was to be some kind of savior at that time, or I was the messenger. Actually, I was the messenger for Angkor, because he was the god of the temple that I was sent to in Lemuria. Yeah, it gets a little convoluted to talk about it. You have to read about it, so it, you know, is makes a little more sense. But yeah, I wasn't even of this planet. I was brought from heaven, an angel from heaven is how they described it. So that I am an angel, just as they are. So
what is your understanding of your mission today?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I was very disobedient when they would tell me to do things. And this is just, this book release is I'm finally doing it. I'm finally getting the book out there. And my mission was, I feel like that part of my mission, I'm like, okay, guys, here you go. The book is out. And there was a part of me just thought I would just, you know, just let it go. And that didn't happen because I don't know, is this compelling to say that I have it out there? And I'm like, okay, angels, I'm letting people know it's out there. And then it just kind of grew. And so I have no idea what will happen with it. And I have no idea where this will take me. But I do believe if there's enough interest in the book, I will probably write a second book in the series about where they come from whence they came. It will be.
So birthing this book was really something that you were hesitant about for a while.
Oh my gosh, I was in hiding. Yes. Yeah.
Talk about that, please.
Well, for one thing, because I broke with PTSD because of the weight of it and people not wanting to hear the message. And also, too, there were times in the book where the angels were like, don't send any more messages out and don't share any of this writing with anyone. So basically, they were saying, Irene, lay low. Well, they never called me the Irene. They always called me a Pharaoh. But lay low. And so that was a little frightening because they're obviously to save the world. I'm supposed to have some connection to others who are supposed to stop the bad guys. And the bad guys have been around for eons, and they keep coming back, and so do we, this group, I suppose, of chosen ones that are going to eventually, hopefully, get rid of the bad guys so the angels can come back to Earth to live in the garden again. So that's the scary part. You know, it's like, I don't know. I'm exposing myself. They know I'm out there. So who knows? In fact, when I released the book, I told my eldest brother, I wrote him an email and I said, if I go missing or I'm found dead, you'll know why.
Heaven forbid. Heaven forbid. Yeah. We will not allow that to happen, Irene. That's not going to happen.
That's the feeling. You know, that was the feeling I had when I released it. It was kind of scary. Now I don't have that same kind of nervousness, but I did when I first released it, I have to be honest.
If I have to don my fiery shield and sword to protect you, I will do that. This will not happen.
Oh, Victor, that's so sweet. Aw, thank you.
You're welcome. And I do have a fiery sword and shield, but that's another story from another time. So where do you stand with this today?
Well, right now, like I said, I really wasn't expecting to have people. I mean, I thought I might sell 10 books, you know, in the whole forever and ever. But people are interested. And so if there is enough interest, then I probably will write book two, Cracking the Angels Code, book two, From Whence They Came. So because people have questions. And I think that instead of trying to answer each person individually, that I'll probably be doing, you know, like some Facebook special things where I'm answering people's questions, and also then just do the book so people can see what they communicated to me about where they come from and what happens when you die and things like that.
And the book has become an Amazon smash hit, right?
Well, surprisingly, for new releases, it's been number one in prophecies since I put it out. And that's been, I think, 2 weeks now, if even that. I don't think it's been 2 weeks. Yeah.
And what would you like readers to take away from Cracking the Angels Code?
Well, I'm hoping, quite honestly, I'm hoping that they will go on the journey with me, and so that they will be able to feel what I felt, you know, when they're reading it, to see that I was trying to understand. I think a lot of the people who read the book probably know about Lemuria and know about some of these other things that are mentioned in the book. But at the time, I'm hoping I made it clear to them that I had no idea of any of this. And I was trying to learn it when I didn't have internet access or anything like that. So that's what I'm hoping. And that, and it's enjoyable. And they'll get to know me. You know, it's like they'll get to know my personality. So.
Absolutely. A fascinating read, a riveting read. I strongly urge listeners, go out and get her book, get it today and read it today and go on the journey with her. It's an amazing journey. I know I'm joining her on the journey, and I hope that all of you do too. My guest this evening, Dr. Irene Blinston, author of Cracking the Angel's Code, One Woman's Journey Deciphering Angelic Messages of What is to Come. Irene, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about your work.
Well, the book is right now, like I said, for the next 6 weeks to 8 weeks, it's only going to be available on Amazon. So they can put my name in or they can type in the title, Cracking the Angel's Code, and it'll take them to the page. And if they go to blinston.com, it's my last name.com, they can read some of the information that I have from my original doctoral research, which had to do with religious apparitions. But I also have other paranormal and supernatural phenomena information on there as well. It's kind of interesting.
Irene, thank you so much for joining us. This was absolutely fascinating.
Oh, you sweetie, thank you. I'm so happy to be here with you.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.